Tango Tango Papa 2099, December 30th, 2021.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you once again from vacation. The vacation days are rapidly kind of coming to a close. So today's the 30th, so I've got five more days remaining. So the 31st, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, back to work on January the 5th. So, you know, that's kind of the way it ends up working. So, my parents got here last night. They drove up from South Texas. And so they're going to be here for a while. Actually, a while longer after I leave, go back to work. So, but anyway, they made the trip. They spent one night in a motel in Waco, and then they were able to make the remaining trip. They got here. Well, it was a little bit after dark. It was probably a bit after 6 p.m. whenever they got here. So, you know, and it's sort of a grueling trip. Not for me, obviously, but it's kind of a grueling trip for them because, you know, basically, I think because of their age and, you know, they're not really used to driving long distances constantly, because there's a lot of people, even younger people, that wouldn't, you know, that almost 1,000-mile trip, 900 and something miles from South Texas to here, you know, they would kind of have a hard time riding that far, you know, one day and then staying in a motel and then doing it, the rest of it the next day. But so anyway, they made it. They're here. They just left a while ago. They're going to go down, go shopping somewhere, maybe to Walmart. I don't know. So they're going to go buy some groceries. So anyway, it's another nice day right now. It's sunny and 60 degrees. I think the last time I looked, it said that Saturday it's supposed to end up at some point Saturday cooling down to 8 degrees. Now, I don't really know if that's still the case or not. Because, you know, of course, this stuff can change. It's always subject to change because they're just making kind of best guesses. And, of course, the longer they predict out, the you know, the harder it gets to make the accurate predictions. So today it says the high should be 62 and then the low should be 49. Friday, 66, low 50. And then Saturday, 56 with a low of 9. And then Sunday, 29 degrees and then a low of 16. So once it gets cold, it's only going to warm up to 29 on Sunday. And then it's, you know, like in the 40s and 50s after that. Maybe, you know, you get on out towards January the 6th, it's in the 30s. And then again in the 40s towards the end of the week, next week. So, but let's see. So Saturday, I guess it's going to be raining for a while, And I guess it doesn't, it's not going to, the rain's going to quit, and then it's slowly going to get down into the colder temperatures as the day progresses. So, but it looks, at least with this forecast, it looks like the rain is going to stop before the temperature drops below freezing, which that's always good because you don't want any kind of freezing rain. That's, or snow or whatever. Rather avoid that if possible. So anyway, like I say, back to work on January the 5th. So I got five more days to kind of hang out. And, you know, that's, you know, be going back to work. So that's, I don't know, work is, you know, I've been enjoying the time off and what have you. But I think that, you know, it'll be a good thing to kind of go back to work. So, but I've pretty much gotten all my laundry done and stuff like that. So when I do go back to work, then there's just certain things that I need to make sure that I carry back from the house into the truck. I haven't taken a whole lot of things. I've already got the laundry that I've done. I already got it out there. It's really better to do it you know, kind of as I go, rather than just wait until the very last minute. So, but I'll be going back to work, and then, you know, that's that. I was actually kind of shocked, you know, because I have this ADP app on my phone, and, you know, it's a kind of a payroll type app. And my company, a trucking company, has used ADP for some period of time. But it's just been recently, I guess they notified us that there was this app that was available. And it's, I've probably talked about it before. It's kind of nice because in it, instead of having to send a message on their messaging system, I'm able to actually just log in, and then it tells me what my, you know, like a payday, and it's also got a history, and it tells me, you know, what the gross is and what, you know, the taxes and what have you that come out, and then, you know, so you can kind of, then of course you get the net that gets deposited to the bank. But I was kind of looking through this, and I was really kind of shocked. And I'll show it to the camera. If I can get it aimed at the camera properly. See, up there at the top, it says year to date, and then it says gross. $87,047.34. Now, of course, that's not the net, because if you also look below that, it says, if I can get it aimed at the camera again, it says taxes $21,648.56. And then, you know, and then some comes out for the retirement. And I guess, you know, that goes into the 401k. So I don't know what the, that doesn't really tell me what the W-2 form is. And so I, you know, just have to wait on them to send the W-2 form before I can really do the taxes, because I'm not exactly sure how that's calculated. But so I can wait. They'll be sending that towards the end of December. But actually, like I say, I was really shocked when I saw that, because I had no idea that it was that much. And, you know, I really, you know, if you've been listening to me any length of time, you know that I've had people ask me, well, how many miles do you drive a week, or how many miles do you get if it's another driver? Because, you know, drivers are all about miles. And I don't keep track of it. There was a period of time years ago where I put, you know, I would kind of diligently put all of this stuff into spreadsheets. And, you know. And then after I did that for a while, then I thought, well, why am I doing that? It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to keep doing that because you know, you get it and then you spend it and turn that off there. There we go. You get it and then you spend it and you know, it just didn't make any sense. So as long as I, you know, my philosophy's been as long as I keep busy, as long as I'm able to keep busy, they keep me fairly busy, and you know, there's really no point. You know, I'm not sitting a lot, you know, and they're not making unreasonable demands of me. Everything's kept pretty reasonable, and so as long as that's that, then why bother? Don't really have any problem keeping track of it, you know, or, you know, they're not keeping track of it, rather. So, you know, for years, my income was, you know, years and years and years, my income was around 42,000, maybe 45,000. And, you know, in just probably the last few years, probably I'd have to go back and look at my income tax returns, but, you know, probably starting probably around 2016, it started to go up. And I had no idea that it had gone, I really had no idea that it had gone up this much. So I actually was really quite shocked that it was that much. So, you know. But, and I don't know if there's going to be more upward pressure on it or not. You know, it's possible that there will be. It depends on how many new drivers they're able to bring into the system, how many people that are my age end up retiring, because there always are. You know, you've got all these baby boomers, and I'm considered a baby boomer. You got all these baby boomers that are actually retiring, and you know, some of those are drivers. Now, you do have a certain small percentage of them that will come back probably in some one capacity or another. And so there's that. But as far as the over-the-road drivers, there's always a shortage of over-the-road drivers. And that's been going on for many, many years, probably going way back maybe as late as like 1990. I'm trying to remember. It may have been in even the late 80s, like 1988, there was already a shortage of drivers. And so this has just continued. And it's, in recent years, it's really become more critical. And so now there are, you know, some bare spots on the shelves. And, you know, you go in certain places and you got bare spots on the shelves. And of course, they're saying, well, it's a driver shortage, or it's because of the virus, or it's because of this, or because of that. But some of it is because of a definite lack of drivers, or especially over-the-road drivers. And, of course, you have they're still trying to push the idea of automated trucks and automated vehicles that would just be able to drive them, you know, kind of drive themselves around. Well, that's fine and dandy. That'll work in some circumstances, as long as you can, if you have, as you know, make the driving course that the automated truck or the automated vehicle is going to be driving on, if you can make that as problem-free as possible and eliminate as many variables as possible, then it might be able to be made to work. But then, you know, the problem that you're going to have is that it's going to be limited. And, you know, the other thing that people don't realize, you know, as a truck driver, yeah, I do a lot of driving, no question about it. I do a ton of driving, but I'm also conducting business. And I think people tend to, you know, because there's the idea, well, 40% of the trucking costs are the driver wages, okay? Well, the driver does more than just drive the vehicle. And I think that when people talk about 40% of the trucking costs or driver wages, they tend to discount the idea that, or they're not thinking about the idea, that the driver is actually conducting business for the company. And so the drivers are conducting business, you know, and in a lot, there's a lot of owner-operator drivers. Now, you know, why couldn't it, if you are able to perfect the idea of a self-driving truck, then it would seem to me that it would be a, if that was such a great idea, then someone would, an individual owner-operator could just, you know, buy this self-driving truck and they could just stay home and watch Netflix while the truck made money for them. Think that's going to happen? Somehow I'm highly doubtful of that. There's virtually no equipment that I know of that doesn't require some sort of human intervention, that you can just buy the piece of equipment and it just makes money for you. If something like that exists, I want somebody to tell me what it is. Love to know what that is. Where you could just buy whatever it was, whatever piece of equipment, and it would just be completely automated and make money for you. And you would just sit back and collect the money. You know, I don't think there is a piece of equipment like that. Probably the closest, now that I think about it, would be, you know, people that buy houses and, you know, they have their rent houses and they become landlords. Tighten it down a little bit so that it doesn't, there, it's going to stay put better. Messing with the microphone. So, you know, someone has a rent house, let's say, and they're able to, you know, then they have this idea, well, I just have this rent house and I just sit back and this rent house just magically generates income for me. Well, there's a problem with that, as any landlord can tell you. The house is always deteriorating. There's always things breaking, and then you have horrible renters. You know, but it, just a house just sitting there with no one in it is deteriorating. Even in, you know, there's a, can be a genuine argument made that it's deteriorating more quickly with someone not in it than it does with someone in it. And, you know, they're always, you know, so they've always, the owners of those, like a rent house, always has headaches. Because they're a landlord, and then if they're going to be an effective landlord, they've got to really work at it. And even if they, you know, get the good renters and what have you, they still end up with problems. Every single one of them that I've ever talked to has had trouble of one sort or another over a long period of time, and then it kind of ends up turning into a full-time job trying to manage something like that. If you've got more than, you know, you got several rent houses, then that, you know, they've got to pay for maintenance or do it themselves. And then if they're, once they become too old and or if they're disabled in any way, they got medical problems, they can't do the, you know, do the maintenance themselves anymore. And then they have to hire people to do it. And that's unreliable because, you know, maybe they're the people that they're hiring aren't actually doing the work, or they're doing a lousy job with it. You know, and then a tenant calls you up with a broken pipe and a broken this and a broken that, and the stool's backed up and God knows whatever else. Or, you know, or maybe they set the thing on fire accidentally and it burns down. So that I had a friend I used to have that he's dead now. He lived in Lincoln, Nebraska for a period of time. He was renting this house, and they had an ice storm. This has probably been a couple of years ago. They had an ice storm, and the tree branch came, and it came down through the roof in the bedroom. And so he had to call the landlord, and the landlord had to, you know, was able to, you know, do the work himself, I think. But he had to come out, and he had to spend a bunch of money, you know, kind of repairing the roof and then repairing the roof on the inside as well, the ceiling, because the branches actually came through the ceiling, you know, and because my friend sent me pictures of it after it happened. So I don't think that, you know, this idea that you're going to be able to just buy a piece of equipment and it's just going to make you money ain't going to happen. Because that is akin to the idea of you're going to have a perpetual motion machine. You know, even if, you know, let's take this into the realm of slavery, you know, because there's this idea that if you, and I'm sure the slavers had it, that back in the days of slavery, and, you know, there's still slavery that's going on in the world today. You don't really hear about it much, but it is going on, actual honest-to-God slavery. There's this idea that you just have these people and you just force them to work and they just have to do the work for you and they don't have any choice. And you just buy them and they're just going to do the work. Well, it's not quite so simple. You know, you go back into the days of slavery in America and, you know, they had to make sure that those slaves were... you know, had food, they had to make sure they had shelter, they were responsible for them, if you know, because they paid money for them, so therefore they had to protect them. You know, they couldn't, you know, because then if they got sick or whatever, then, you know, what happened to their investment? It's like if you have, you know, some sort of cattle or something. You know, I've got a friend that's, that raises cat. You know, he raises a certain amount of cattle. And he's got to make sure that those cattle are fed every day and, you know, kind of take care of them and make sure they're not escaping. And, you know, there's a whole plethora of things that he has to do in order to kind of maintain that if he's going to have a business out of it. So, you know, businesses don't happen automatically. You have to have people running them, and the people that are running them actually have to care about them if they're going to keep them going. So, but in any case, I think it is probably possible that my income could end up kind of creeping up some more. And of course, this, you know, this was just from Crete. This doesn't count the Social Security. I received 6 months worth of Social Security, and 85% of it, you know, I received like $13,000 and some odd dollars for, you know, 6 months of Social Security. A certain amount of 85% of that is going to be taxable, and so I'm going to probably end up having to pay the IRS, and, you know, there may be certain things that I can do to kind of mitigate that, but, you know, I'll just probably end up having to wait until I get the W-2 form towards the end of January. And then I can kind of, next time I come home, let's say towards the end of January, beginning of February, then I'll enter all that into TurboTax and, you know, see what the result is. So, but I'm kind of expecting that I'm going to, you know, I'm probably going to have to pay, you know, probably at least $1,000. But you know, be that as it may, I'm prepared to do it, no problem. So, in the last podcast, I was talking about herds, groupthink, you know, and externalized behavior. And, you know, all of these things are sort of interrelated. You know, all of our, you know, a lot of our problems, I can't say all of them, but a lot of them as human beings and where it, you know, where it involves human behavior really does come back to one thing. And that one thing is, where do we get our identity from? Where does our identity come from? It's not, you know, ultimately our identity is not coming from, you know, it's not coming from the physical world. You know, yeah, you have certain traits, you have certain personality traits that are kind of coming, you know, they seem to be genetic or kind of genetically based. And I'd say maybe 50% of it is genetics, and then the other 50% is, you know, how you were raised. So you have the nurture versus nature argument. So, but, you know, where do we go wrong as human beings? Because we kind of do lose our way. Are we externally, because we have the traits that we have, but are we externally based creatures? Do we end up kind of going along with whatever the groupthink is? Or are we able to think for ourselves and sort of have our own internal guidance mechanism? And then all kinds of problems, if that's messed up, if you're an externalized individual, you're not even really an individual, you kind of become an externalized person, and then you lose you're really losing your individuality in various degrees. And then all kinds of problems result, because then you may believe you're thinking for yourself, but you're actually not. Someone else is doing it. And of course, in this day and age, a lot of it's just advertisers. You know, people figure out, well, you know, this is, you know, I'm going to advertise this and advertise that, and you know, a certain amount of people are going to take it up. But, you know, and I'm not saying that advertising is bad. Capitalism's not bad in and of itself. But in order for any system to work, it has to be, you know, you need to, if it's going to really function properly, you need to have actual, you know, individuals that are able to kind of think for themselves. And not just act because, you know, group behavior. Just act out of group behavior. But it, so it's useful to kind of go through how you lose your individuality. And of course, it's, you lose it through the mechanism of resentment. And this is something that every human being ends up doing. We come into the world, you know, as children, little kids, come into the world, and, you know, if we're fortunate enough to have a mother and a father that are together and stay together, that's obviously, that's a better solution or better circumstance in which to find yourself. But even if you have a mother and a father that stick together, they're not going to be perfect. Children have expectations. Children come into the world expecting, you know, they sort of have this idealized expectation that the parents are, and they can't verbalize this, of course, but they have this idealized expectation that the parents are going to teach them, you know, kind of show them the ropes. The parents are going to feed them and clothe them and take care of them and wipe their rear ends, change their diapers, etc. And then as they age, keep them from running out into the street, see that they're educated and that they can get along in society, get along well with other people. All of those things, they expect that. And, of course, little kids tend to look at parents as if they're gods. And that's kind of the expectation that kids have, is that the parents are sort of godlike and they're going to sort of actually be godlike, meaning that they're going to do what's best for the kid. And, of course, the kids end up, and always end up being disappointed. And then plus human beings come into the world with a proclivity to want to play God in our own minds. And so it kind of turns into a really messy situation that's obviously non-ideal at the very least. So, and I think there's a reason why we do this. I think that you can't, if you imagine that it's your God and you try to create, you could say offspring, creatures in your image, but you wanted to give them autonomy. You didn't want to make them just into a, kind of the wind-up doll where you pull the string and then I love you, I love you, I love you. What good would that be? What good would it be if God, creator created an animal in the form that looked like a human being that just says, I love you, I love you, I love you? That would be useless. Why would you do that? So you have to be able to, in order to create a creature that could actually function autonomously, that could actually love you because it wanted to love you versus because it just, you pull the string and then it just has to do it. You have to give them free will. And I do believe that one area that I'm sure, that I've determined that free will does exist is in the area we can either, put it this way, we can either follow our conscience, unify with our conscience, follow our conscience, or not. We're not forced to. We don't have to listen to it. So-called still small voice. We do not have to listen to it. And, of course, we don't listen to it at our peril. So we have been given this free will, and so, if you're God and you want to create a creature that can think for itself and that can actually, love you, as it were, then you have to give them freedom. And so how do you do that? You have to just give them the freedom and then, knowing that they're going to mess up. So I think God knew that Adam and, you have the Adam and Eve story, and I think that God knew that human beings were just, they were going to mess up. It was going to be messy. And that's where the idea of salvation comes in. We can be saved from that. But you have to want to be saved. You have to want to know the truth. You have to want revelations of the truth. So, but we have this thing called resentment. Resentment is how we play God as human beings in our own minds. And the best way that I've ever come up, my own description of resentment, what it You know, sometimes you'll hear me use adjectives like being upset and angry and, you know, different emotional, you know, terms, adjectives. But resentment, you can really think of it, and I'm not even sure resentment is an emotion, but it you can think of it as a puffing up of the wrong side of the ego. But you can also think of it as, it's useful to think of it as sort of as if you, in your mind, your God sort of hurling the mental thunderbolts as if you could strike people dead with your thoughts. Just like, you know, as if your thoughts were lightning that could just strike people, places, and things dead that offended you. That's one, the most effective way that I've learned to kind of, or that I've come up with, you know, where I can maybe kind of get the idea across of what resentment is. Because I can talk about it, I can talk around it. You have to figure out what it is yourself. And, you know, once you're able to understand what it is, then you know what to avoid. So, but if you look it up, it sort of means to, you know, and you know, it's to feel something twice or more than once is the, you know, one of the definitions of it. But in any case, you can think of it as a little burning or a little, you know, kind of splitting type of thing. Puffing up, as I said before. Hurling the mental thunderbolts as if you could strike people dead. How dare they offend you? How dare they offend God? So, but he had to give us the ability to do that. Because otherwise, if we didn't have the ability to do that, then we would be the, you know, we'd be the wind-up dolls. I love you, I love you, I love you. We would be the wind-up dolls, you know, with just kind of wind-up doll behavior. Now, ironically, what resentment ends up doing is causing you to absorb your environment. It causes resentment causes you to become enslaved. Resentment being the sin, missing the mark. Resentment is missing the mark. All who sin are slaves. And so we become slaves of this and slaves of that, slaves of other people. Sometimes literally slaves, oftentimes it's sort of invisible. You know, it's, you don't have chains around your ankles, but you don't have physical shackles. But people do become enslaved, and it's usually to each. It could be people, places, and things. A lot of time, most of the time, I think it's people, but people do become enslaved, and you know. So it's really an insidious thing. So we're here to sort of, I think, to in part to experience what resentment is, and hopefully at some point mature enough where you can get rid of it and you can let it go. Just let it go. Because one of the things resentment does, it separates you from who you could be. It separates you from your natural or God-given identity. It separates. So to the degree that you resent, to that degree you're separate. And then the thing that you separated from, the identity source that you separated from, kind of then turns into a guilty conscience because it's there sort of reminding you what you where you went wrong. So resentment causes you to become externalized. And so if someone can come along and really stir up your emotions, stir up the resentment that you already have, you know, let's say it's some sort of a rabble rouser. We even have terms for these things, like, you know, rabble rouser, you know, like labor union, get the people all mad because they have to work, get them to resenting their jobs, the fact that they have to work. Then, you know, we create this sort of an externalized union identity in this case. And there's a sort of an identity that's formed out of being mad because you have to work, resenting the fact that you've got to work. You know, the same thing, you know, get women to resent the fact that they're women. Get black people to resent the fact that they're black. Get Asian people to resent the fact that they're Asian. Etc., etc., etc. It's a bottomless pit. It really is a bottomless pit. So the more you can stir up the rage, the resentment, the more externalized people become. And then the more vulnerable, the more externalized you are, the more vulnerable you become to groupthink. The more vulnerable you become to mob mentality, the more vulnerable you become to herd mentality. You know, and it's one thing for, you know, as I was saying in the last podcast, it's one thing to have to, you know, have a physically, you know, kind of a physically based herd, you know, where you're, you know, even in human being terms, you're at the, you know, you're waiting in line or whatever for something, then that's one thing. That's a physical, you know, we maintain our distance and, you know, don't intrude too much on other people's spaces. And so we go through all these physical rituals that are sort of really herd type behavior. But then, you know, of course, the downside of that is a stampede. And that stampedes can happen in animals like cattle, and they can happen with human beings too, like in the case of a burning building. Stampedes, people can get trampled and die as a result. So, but where it really becomes dangerous for human beings is when we sort of engage in groupthink or herd behavior when it comes to what we think and how to behave, because the physical world does not tell us how to behave. Science cannot tell you what's right and wrong from a behavior standpoint. You know, so if you can actually get rid of resentment, let go of the resentment, first of all, and of course that makes you have to realize that you actually have it. You have to realize that you actually have the resentment. And if you can do that, then, you know, it becomes possible to let go of it, and then it becomes, if you can actually let go of it, as you let go of it, you're reunified with what you thought was a guilty conscience. You begin to get your identity, access to your identity back. Ultimately, you're able to the idea is you reunify with your creator. Or if, you know, you don't want to believe there's a creator, you reunify with your conscience, what you know of as guilty conscience. Reunify with your original identity, the source, whatever the source is of your original identity. You can reunify with it. And if you can actually do that, then you're no longer vulnerable to the groupthink. You can actually then begin to independently examine things and kind of think for yourself. It But you could still, you know, if the group is doing something and it's actually useful to do that, even from a behavior standpoint, then yeah, that would be, you know, doesn't mean that you have to do the opposite just because the group's doing it. But oftentimes the group is wrong. You know, if the group of human beings that you're kind of hooked up with is stampeding over the cliff, doesn't mean you don't want to stampede over the cliff with them. I think that would be a terrible mistake. And if you see that they're going to stampede, then it's probably best just to kind of get out of the way. Separate from it, save yourself from it. If you can kind of see the stampedes coming. But it is useful if you can get away from the groupthink. Get away, you know, from a behavior standpoint as far as what's right, what's wrong, what are your values? What values do you have? Because a lot of, with externalized people, they may think they have this value system, and they think that the value system that they have, maybe they've chosen it or whatever. Maybe they're just slaves to it. It's possible that they're just kind of enslaved to it. So, useful. It really is useful to understand what resentment is, understand what it is, why we have it, because it's a gift, actually. If you think about it, it's actually a gift that we were given. Other animals dog, cat, cow, name the animal, even insects, they can get mad. But that's not the same as resentment. They're not playing God. You know, and the only human beings can play God. But that's a gift that we've been given that we shouldn't use. But it was necessary to give it to us in order to be able to give us free will. Because then we have the free will not, you know, kind of knowing what it is, because that's one of the reasons I believe we're here, to be in this messy world to find out, kind of where the mess leads and how messy can the mess get. Then we can back away from it. I look at this, this existence as sort of a halfway house between heaven and hell. And we can kind of, we're free here to move towards heaven, or we can move towards hell. There's a lot of people that do move towards hell. They create a living hell for themselves. And hell, the situations that people create for themselves, mindlessly create for themselves often, they really are best described as hell. You know, where they're torturing themselves and torturing each other. You know, and so it doesn't have to be that way. You can give up resentment. And if you're able to actually do that, existence actually becomes a delight. It's a delightful thing to exist, beyond any shadow of a doubt. So, anyhow, I'm going to go ahead and cut this off for now. Hope everyone is having a great week. And let's see. So I want to Where did my text go? Pardon me, I'm still figuring this out. Still trying to figure this software out. So I'm going to get more sophisticated at it as I go along. So in any case, hope everyone's having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.